At the heart of the scriptures, and certainly the message of Jesus, is a proclamation that God is madly in love with all of us. God's crazy about you. God does not come to humble us, but always to exalt us, knowing who we are, his beloved sons and daughters. Never to punish or destroy or condemn, but always to liberate us. And I think many of us need to be liberated from some of the false ideas of God that we might have been brought up with in our understanding of ourselves as well. Some beliefs that just don't work anymore, that never really did work. As mentioned at Christmas time from Isaiah, these words were spoken to the people of Israel, but they're spoken to all people and to all of us. And we need to hear them. And once again, I'll say it again. God says, you are precious in my eyes. You are honored, and I love you. Take that into yourself. Let it go deep into your soul. Because that's what God wants you to know. And that belief can change your life. You're all familiar with the apple of my eye. Some children are privileged to know right away that they are the apple of their parents' eye. My brother's here, so I can't say I'm the only one in my own. But I know I was the apple of my parents' eye. And he is too, and so is my sister. This phrase, apple of the eye, you know what it refers to? That dark, reflective part of the eye in you that acts as a mirror to you as the viewer. Go home tonight and get up close to the mirror and look, and you will see that dark little thing, and you'll see a reflection of this little man or little woman. In fact, literally, the Hebrew translation is the little man, the little man of the eye. That's what it literally means, the little man of the eye. And that's our own tiny reflection registered in the eye that looks back at you. What the phrase suggests, I believe, is that God watches us so carefully and with such devotion that we are always in the divine eye. And God should be the apple of our eye as well. Certainly, God's will was the apple of Jesus' eye. And when a voice from heaven proclaims Jesus to be the beloved Son, the pleasure of God, well, we certainly understand that Jesus enjoys that premier place in the sight of God. But Jesus enjoys that position because he too keeps the divine will, keeps God in his view at all times. Our view isn't always of God and the divine will. But anyhow, with Jesus, it's a reciprocal relationship. Each beholds the other with absolute devotion. How do you and I, with so many hills and so many valleys in our spiritual composition, hope to become, in any sense, pleasing to God? First of all, we don't have to do anything. We already are the pleasure of God. If a voice from the heavens speaks to us in the assembly today, it will surely declare, "You are my beloved sons and daughters." Yeah? That may come to a surprise to some of you, maybe many of you, who feel perhaps unloved or not deserving of God's love for whatever reason. But God cannot stop loving you. It's impossible for God to do so, no matter what you do. Of course, God's love is not a matter of merit, but a fact. The God of love created you and I and us for love. And it's love that holds us in this life. And it's love that awaits us on the horizon. It's our destiny. But we need not wait until we die, but can appreciate it and know it now. So it's not God's delight in us that is an issue. That's not the issue. The issue is your and my response. How do we reply to such devotion? Well, I think I already said it. By placing the divine will in the apple of our eye, so that we begin to live and move and have our being in response to God's generosity, to God's goodness and compassion, kindness and forgiveness. They're all gifts. You don't have to do anything to deserve them. We fill in the valleys of our omissions with new virtues. We wear down the mountains of our transgressions by repenting, by turning back again to the divine will, and by doing charity that aims at converting our hearts. God alone is the source of our salvation. For you and I, we are to prepare the way by straightening out the bends in our character and to become, in our lives, better channels of God's grace and love in the world. Now, that's not a hardship. It's not a slog through the salt mines of penitence and character building and purifying and self-control. No. When you love someone and you see in their eyes the person they imagine you to be, which is your realized ideal self, you want to become that. I mean, it's quite natural that you want to become that which they believe you are. That little man and woman in the other's eye, that's you, with a little more refining and cultivating. And that's how God looks at us, with divine love. The same love that calls us into this life draws us into greater union with its own nature. Pretty soon, the valleys are filling in themselves, and the mountains fall like felled trees. So once again, let me repeat. You are precious. You are honored. You are God's beloved. You are the apple of God's eye. And God wants you to know that and experience it. And again, God comes to exalt you, not to humble you. Now, if you believe that, if you believe what I'm saying, no, it's not me, it's God who's saying it through me. it will change your life. And it will change your behavior. Why? Because all behavior starts with one's beliefs. So change your beliefs and let go of some of them that aren't healthy and haven't been good for you. The challenge is not to get God to love you. We only need to accept it. And once you realize and experience God's love, it enables you and me to then express that love in our lives. Now, isn't it wonderful to know and experience that you're loved? It is, isn't it? But you know what's more wonderful than that? It's that you truly love another. You see, to know love is to do love. Are you doing love? We all reap what we sow. That's a spiritual law. The more you love, the more love you sow in the world, you'll find the more love you receive back. You send something out there that's not good, it will come back to you as well. So sow love. The more you give, the more you receive. And it's a gift. There are no conditions. God never stops loving. And all we can do in the end is to say thank you. That's what the Eucharist means, yeah? What does the Eucharist mean? It means thanksgiving. So let's give thanks.